there will be a corner in which you're not welcome.
Everybody's BFF from just a couple of months ago.
You can only get so much blood out of a turnip.
I'm scared that Hurley has to come to my defense.
Grab an extra beverage. We're going to be here for a minute.
Yo, my deck just taking a dump on my chest.
Your Honor. I'll be like, oh.
The game is aging so well.
That's ridiculous the way they announced a huge change like that.
Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Try Hards. We've gone back to Ravnica. What does that mean for Limited? And what are you excited about? We'll dig into it, whether it's teams or Limited or even someone who has a team full of people and is unlimited in their prognosis for Magic, but they may have no idea what they're actually getting into. Don't worry. You don't need a crystal ball. All will be revealed on this episode of Tryhards. I'm Sean Seacrease. He's Matt Hurley, and he is Brian Tibbetts. Guys, what are we drinking tonight for episode 120? Here, it got a little unusually warm and hot, and I'll be honest, the girlfriend yesterday decided, wait a minute, they're not selling my favorite beer in this market anymore. I just remembered that I like all that stuff you put in the fridge. I'll just drink most of those. So there are some leftover all-day IPAs. I've got a couple of those here. Is it gotten to an unhealthy 87 degrees in October here in the Midwest today as I try to cool things off. Brian, how you faring after your weekend trip to a delicious brew pub in the second city?
Sketchbook over in Evanston was fantastic. I had no less than three types of rye beers, a rye saison, a rye IPA, and some other rye beer I can't even remember off the top of my head. But they had little 5-ounce pours, which were just perfect to just kind of get a taste, and you could taste the big variety of stuff. So yeah, congrats Sketchbook for having a small place, great beer, good wait staff. Wish I could have spent a little bit more time there, but they had last call at like 10:45, and I'm thinking, dang, that's early. Wasn't able to bring anything back because I forgot the growlers at home, which was just my bad. That was just terrible. Last week, I was drinking an Oktoberfest, of which I can't even remember ever having a Bell's Oktoberfest, which seems kind of shocking. But this week is one that I have always have on hand about this time of year. It's just the Sam Adams Oktoberfest, and it's is really, really good. It's maltier than the Bell's, I think, but still really good. And I'm with you, Sean. It got a little warm today. I felt like I had an IPA, but alas, none in the fridge. So we're going to pretend it's fall.
Matt, is there any pretending that you can get out of the heat and humidity down south?
Oh, no, we went to a wedding Saturday night, and in their defense, they schedule a wedding, you know, the first weekend of October. You don't think it's going to be 92 degrees inside the building, unair conditioned. That's exactly what it was. So it is nice and hot down here, too. Actually, tonight, I'm just having a little bit of bourbon. It's been a long day and a long weekend, really. So it's a relaxing night for me. I'm asleep like a baby tonight.
Well, as Matt dries out his October swamp ass, we'll get the rest of this cast underway here this evening on Tryhards. It's time for us to do a Patreon raffle. We've still got some spoils from our road trip to Minneapolis to give you. Reaching back into the vault, Brian says we have an autographed Tryhards playmat, and this is going to go out tonight. Brian, thank you for holding on to those and doing the mailing work. Matt says we have 44 eligibles. He's got the list. I have the Tryhards randomizer. Here we go. I'm going to hit the randomizer button. 1 to 44. 17, Matthew. 17.
Avery Martin. So congratulations. Avery Martin's been with us for, wow, it looks like
long time.
Almost 20 months almost.
Thank you so much for your support. Brian will get that in the mail just as soon as possible. One of our original Tryhards playmats that we got together and, let's be honest, defaced by autographing it while in Minnesota. Hopefully you'll enjoy it anyway, Avery, and thanks for your support. Tournaments this weekend. It was the first weekend that Guilds of Ravnica was part of the official tournament scene. Wizards celebrated with two limited events, one in Montreal and one in Mexico City. Montreal saw 1,070 turnout. Christopher Leonard Hugh Nguyen was the champ. He used the combination of Sure Strike plus Gravitic Punch. It seems like a wild combo to go for when you're in that final eight draft, but it worked out for Christopher Leonard. Congratulations on the win. Meanwhile, guys, contrast that with Mexico City, 416 people for Guilds Limited. Mark Jacobson took it down, but that top eight that he had to work through turned out to be one of the better ones you're going to assemble. Martin Yuza, Jason Amaz Chan, Steve Rubin, Logan Nettles. I don't know if I'd rather wade through almost 1,100 people or try to wade through that top eight they had in Mexico City. Both intimidating prospects, especially with a brand new set. Coming up this weekend, more limited, but of the team variety, GP Denver and Nagoya will both be team limited. And by the way, if you were hoping to break out and play something else at SCG Philly, that one was canceled. The convention center at Philadelphia, a couple of months ago, they announced had some devastating weather and it wasn't able to be repaired. So SCG Philly actually canceled this weekend. Limited, while wonderful to play in, doesn't often make the most friendly of viewing experiences. And while we were all busy this weekend and trying to carve out time, what little bit we did get to watch was of the team trios variety. SCG Columbus had 271 teams. Logan, Parsons, and Shootman took it down on Grixis Control Humans and Green White Tokens. They only had to defeat the team of Keith, Mullins, and Stevens. Keith on Eldrazi Post, Mullins on Burn, and Stevens on Green White Tokens in Standard. Guys, the Green White Tokens list in Standard this weekend seemed to be the rage no matter what portion of this event you were in. If you made day two, or if you were just registering with your team on day one. As we usually look at the team trio events, because it's so hard to mine the data, looking at what made day two kind of gives us a picture of the winner's metagame, so to speak. Just 28 teams out of the 271 made day two, and these were all the decks that had at least two copies in each of their respective formats. In Standard, Sultai Control, Mono Green Aggro, Boros Angels each had two, Golgari Midrange had three, Tokens had four of the Selesnya variety, and Mono Red Aggro, nine in day two. In Modern, Jeskai Control with five, Humans and Blue-White Control with four, Burn and Mono Green Tron with three. Then in Legacy, Grixis Control with seven, Miracles with five, D&T, Dimir Shadow, Eldrazi Post, and Grixis Delver, each with two apiece. Guys, we love Legacy, and that's where we usually like to start. Matt, you were just salivating at the fact that Jody Keith, noted Legacy specialist and well-known for lands play, actually decided against lands this weekend to play Eldrazi Post, and I know you were hyped about this.
Oh, yeah, because that's my classic. When I say my classic, I, of course, mean Booze Cube Scott. You know, basically, he put together, and he's been playing for years, and I played for quite a long time, and it is close to the list I always played. Basically, he's running the big Kozilek instead of the one that draws you four cards. It's good in most metagames, but it was especially good during the Miracles, when Miracles was just running rampant back in the day. And now that Miracles is back around, probably one of the most expensive decks in Legacy, which is saying a whole hell of a lot.
Well, there's a four of one expensive artifact that you need to have if you're going to make this thing run correctly. And those Candelabras, well, they still don't come cheap. Congratulations again to the winning team of Logan, Parson, and Shootman for their win in the team tournament over the weekend. Guys, one of the best things about these events is there's a classic for each format to go with them. Brian in Legacy, 103 players. Steven Sliskar on Black Red Reanimator knocked off John McDermott on Grixis Control. The rest of the top eight, double Eldrazi again, Omnitel, Rug Delver, Maverick, and Goblins. Notably, none of the blue-white renaissance that we've been seeing lately. You've been championing the blue-white combo of the old-school edition of Grindstone Painter's Servant. We've seen blue-white Helm. We've seen a number of blue-white control decks outside of the traditional Miracles build, yet it was notably absent here. Is there anything interesting in your mind from this Legacy Classic?
The kind of absence of Miracles, Joshua Shields took 10th. That's something, obviously, but, you know, usually we've been seeing those Miracle decks popping up quite a little bit over the last couple months, and I just don't know if people are building their decks to kind of avoid the Terminus menace, as it were, but I was a little surprised to see Sneak and Show kind of make a resurgence. Those combo decks seem to be kind of, you know, laying on the maybe 20th places and things in the last few months, so, you know, for them to kind of crack into the top eight and have multiple copies there, I think that's an interesting call for the weekend, and hopefully it'll be a foretelling of things to come.
You might be saying, well, wait a minute, Sean didn't say Sneak and Show. The Omnitel package plays a whole bunch of variety of things, and that's how they had those decks labeled In the Modern Classic, 203 players. It was Peter Oakes on Amulet Titan, knock it off Michael Coyle on Grixis Whirr. Grixis Whirr. We'll get to that in just a second. The rest of the top eight, two times Burn, Jeskai Control, Dredge, Black Red Vengevine still hanging around, and Bant Spirits. Everybody's BFF from just a couple of months ago. Bant Spirits sort of limping into that top eight. I don't know if it was just a bad weekend for the metagame or several pilots chose not to run it, but Bant Spirits, not the menace that we've seen it be at certain times in the modern metagame recently. Grixis Whirr, Brian. You have been playing around with Whirr of Invention, albeit in Legacy lately, and you love to innovate in modern. This is very interesting because you have to look very close to determine a win condition. You've got one. That is a one of Pyrite Spellbomb. There seem to be no backdoor answers here, not until at least post-board game 2 and 3. It seems to me that this deck may actually be picking up where the old Lantern Control decks left off.
I was really excited to see Grixis Whirr as a title. And so when I clicked on this and you just see one ofs in the lands and one ofs in the spell, you're thinking, oh man, somebody's put a lot of time into this, because you just don't get to that one of without a lot of playtesting and realizing that's the right number there. It's interesting. The first spell listed on here is Bottled Cloister. And if anybody's ever played with Bottled Cloister before, you know that that's not a card you can just kind of trifle with. You have to really know what you're doing, because you're removing your hand from the game face down. Beginning of your upkeep, return all cards removed from the game with Bottled Cloister to your hand, then draw a card. It's just kind of a crazy interaction there. So looking at this, I kind of am trying to go down the rabbit hole following the white rabbit. All of the cards in this list I like. I really like Engineered Explosives, especially when there's four of. I love Crucible of Worlds. I love Chalice. Four Mox Opals, Witchbane Orb, when you've got Welding Jar, Tormod's Crypt. Those are the kinds of low casting cost artifacts that's going to make Whirr of Invention just that much stronger. The way I'm playing Whirr is pretty straightforward. Get some low casting cost artifacts on the battlefield. You know, have one of your combo pieces out, end of your opponent's turn. Whirr for the other piece, tapping with Improvise some of those artifacts, get it on the board, and grindstone them out. That seems pretty easy. I'm not 100% sure what's happening on this one, but it seems like you could do a whole lot, or at the most maybe confuse your opponent to the point where they just scoop up their cards and like, I have to go call my mother. Congratulations to Michael Coyle for taking second at the Classics. I'm sure this deck caught a lot of people flat-footed, so whether or not it's going to hang around is another story, but I love when people innovate like this, don't you, Hurley?
Oh, yeah, and I think a lot of innovation is coming from the supposed, and I use that word very loosely, but the supposed shakeup that Assassin's Trophy is causing. I do think the card, I mean, I talked about it at length, that card's very powerful, but I think people are saying, oh, I need to beat Assassin's Trophy, so you're getting decks like this that are kind of like resilient. I'm more than happy with it, because I think that's pretty freaking awesome that people are playing cards like this.
Matt, you were one of the first ones to mention that you were planning for a world in which Assassin's Trophy was going to be premium removal. I'm not sure if people remember or not, but you're going to the SCG Invitational later this year.
There you go. Here it is. Hurley, just pick it up.
Are you seeing this line of innovation continue in the face of Assassin's Trophy, where you have permanence, i.e. things of lesser value that you're not worried about being destroyed, or decks that can feature recursion to get those things back? Assassin's Trophy has only been legal for about 2 seconds. Are we that into pre-planning in your mind?
I think we are to a certain extent. After playing a lot of Assassin's, I shouldn't say a lot, but a good chunk of Assassin's Trophy, I'm not going to lie, I think the card might be a slight bit overrated, because that one land is very tempo. I mean, it drives tempo down a lot. I think these decks that are kind of, I'm not calling them cutesy, but they're resilient to Assassin's Trophy are going to pop up. And I think as the best Assassin's Trophy's deck kind of shake out in the format, these decks are going to excel. And all of a sudden, you're going to see new decks like Bant Spirits come into the format.
Hexproof.deck. Maybe that's next on our stop. Who knows? Detection Tower could be the next financial play in the elevator. I don't want to steal Matt's thunder. I'm sure we'll get to that at some point in the future. Standard Classic, 146 players. Brian Cooper on Boros Angels defeated Andrew Jessup on Grixis Control. That's no mean feat to defeat Andrew Jessup on Grixis Control. Boros Angels. Guys, this is a theme that popped up a couple of times this weekend. We saw it in Team Trios on camera. We saw a second copy of Boros Angels make the top eight in the Classic, along with Mono Red, Boros Aggro, Jeskai Control, Black Green Midrage, and Mono Blue Aggro. Boros Angels. Brian, this is the way that I like to play Boros. I don't like the one-drop, two-drop strategy in Boros. The go-big red-white decks have always interested me because it seems to me that those plays can be so swingy that they can rock a game back from nearly the edge of defeat, especially when you look at the tools that those decks have available right now. And it might start and end with Lyra at the top of that curve. This, to me, is very interesting. And if you end up with a metagame defined by Boros decks, there's a whole lot of different ways this can start to shake out.
Absolutely. I was thinking the exact same thing about this deck when I saw it. And I thinking Brian Cooper should have put not just one Ajani Adversary of Tyrants in this Boros deck, but obviously it did really, really well for him. So two seems really good. If you look at all of the cards and the synergies that go with all of these here, there's a lot of four ofs, there's a lot of three ofs within this, which really means it's a really tightly built list and you're just relying on the synergies among those cards. On the Boros from old Return to Ravnica, where you're kind of in there with the one drop, you know, you're in there with like the first strikers, the double strikers, that's kind of how Boros used to be played. But now, you know, with cards like Odonto Vanguard, which is kind of like your small guy, pairing it with Lyra, pairing it with Aurelia, pairing it with Resplendent Angel, Knight of Grace, Shalai, that kind of stuff, along with History of Benalia to kind of lock up the ground, and then Ajani just putting counters on whatever you've got, is seems just like a really, really strong idea. And I think if there's anything that's going to go toe-to-toe with that Selesnya Tokens deck, which can just crank out ridiculous amounts of lifelinking soldier tokens, I think this is the deck that's going to do it, because the flying ability and the lifelinking ability from Deafening Clarion, I'm really, really excited to do this. If I was going to pick up a deck tomorrow or even this Friday at an FNM, I would wish somebody would just kind of hand me this deck, and I think I would have a ball playing this for a few hours.
Well, we're all typecast in some ways on this cast, and the man who has never been afraid to own who he is the board litterer. The trash man himself, who has to absolutely love the rise of Selesnya Tokens. Matt, you love making tokens. You were talking about Emara the actual second that she was previewed. This has to be something that is up your alley. And if you look at the results, not only from Team Trios, but if you look at the standard classic results as well, the pro community really agrees with you. Selesnya Tokens, it's a great way to fight control decks. It's a great way to fight the Teferi decks. And it's also a great way to gum up the ground against the other aggro decks. You can go wide. You can go big. None of your individual permanence is of utmost importance to you. Right now, Selesnya Conclave seems to have all the answers you could imagine in Standard. And this has got to be making you happy.
It is. My only sad portion of this, when I saw the March of the Multitudes played for the first time at the pre-release, I think I said this, I had eight of them in my cart and I was like, I'll just get them here later. And this was when they were $5 or $4. Now they're $15. I especially enjoyed the game I saw, and it was in the Team Trios, but I saw the game where it was Selesnya on Selesnya, and they had to use black dice to count the number of tokens, which was something like 58, and they had to use white dice to count the number of +1/+1 counters.
That's
it
awesome.
Was, and it was a pile. I think it was Todd Stevens, if I remember right, but it was a pile on versus a pile for sure.
I remember that. I remember the little bit that I saw this weekend of the teams, and then the life totals. Like some guy was down at 9, and then the very next turn he was at like 33.
Yeah,
and then
yeah, they Stevens kept swinging up and down.
Yeah, 34 down to like 21, and then it was just ridiculous.
I've been playing a little bit of Izzet, namely because of Nimbizzet. I can tell you, tokens is a nightmare for that deck because you essentially have to have a board wipe every single turn.
Well, we're going to fire him from his elevator ride for not keeping March of the Multitudes in his checkout cart. But other than that, things will go as usually forecast here this evening. That wasn't the only legacy action, though. All of us originally made plans to be in St. Louis this weekend. all of us for one reason or another, work or personal reasons or just sheer laziness, ended up not going. But Brian, you had your eye on a friend of ours, Duel for Duels, at a place that we've actually come to enjoy playing at when we get down to St. Louis.
Moonbase Market does such a good job at hosting tournaments. We were able to get down there in March, and we had, what, guys, like 175 players at that one. And this one had another charity event hosted by our good friend Jeremy Aronson, who we've had on the show before. He's so good and so generous with his time and resources and the community. I was really happy to see this. And if it was any other weekend, I felt like maybe the tryhards could have assembled for this, because it is our favorite format, of course, with Legacy. So the Duel for Duels, there was some rumor that they got started about an hour late because they had well over 230 people registered for the event, but far fewer showed up for that. And so they were trying to figure out, was there a time issue? You know, are people coming, or what's going to happen? But anyway, it went off without a hitch. Apparently, it was a really, really great tournament. John Hamilton on Death and Taxes took down Ethan Jane Washburn on Storm. And the top eight seemed to be pretty much littered with what you would expect at a normal Legacy tournament. We had three Grixis Control decks, two Omni Shows, one Elves deck, and then, of course, as I said, the aforementioned Death and Taxes and Storm. There was one Grixis Control list, gentlemen, that I did want to talk about, and this was sixth place. And it was a little bit different of a list than what we've seen out of somebody like Reed Duke or some of the other pros piloting this list. This was Tim Carlskint. The creature package in the Grixis list was four Delver, two True Name, and three Gurmag Angler to go along with three Young Pyromancer. And in the main deck had one Bitter Blossom to go along with four Days and four Force of Will. I love kind of the tempo package that's kind of added into that Grixis control list here. And obviously it got him really, really far, sixth place. I think that's really, really great. So it's kind of like a Grixis control, almost like a Grixis Delver, you know, mashup here with the Young Pyromancer. So does that sound like something you would want to run, or do you think just standard Grixis control with the Baleful Strixes and things is still the way to go in the metagame?
I think you still want to go standard Grixis control. There was a lot of, being this was a, let's use air quotes, smaller tournament, there was a lot of spice. And I was seeing that somebody actually ran traditional goblins, you know, like vile goblins, and took, I think it was ninth. Good for this person running this interesting deck and being a little different than the rest of the pack.
Is this a deck you would want to run, or would you just be kind of like, you know, the old man sitting on his front porch saying, no, give me the real Grixis control list?
If I'm going to be an old man sitting on my porch, I'm going to say, give me my Nick Fit, and then we'll go from there. But I'm writing down the list as you were mentioning it, and the only thing that stuck out to me in any kind of control list in Legacy, there's no Snapcaster Mages. That, to me, was conspicuous by its absence. The fact that with Delver, True Name Nemesis, he decided to go more tempo control. Usually you see the tempo decks wanting to go more aggro because of the heavy hitters in that format. And in a standard format where you have fewer really powerful cards, you can do more tempo control. Sometimes you can get away with it in Modern, too. But going tempo control in Legacy, I thought was interesting. And he kind of swung the Grixis pendulum almost sideways at that point. So to me, that's an interesting way to think about the deck. And maybe it leads to some other innovations down the road. So I thought this was very cool.
One Snapcaster in the sideboard, but one Snapcaster, heck, why have one when you can have four? Congratulations to everybody who went down there. And of course, as Jeremy would say, it's all for charity anyway. So kudos to everybody who registered, gave the money where, you know, put their money where their mouth is.
Yeah, you know, Ms. Zemet on social media, Jeremy does a lot of good work. And if you ever go to a tournament that he's organizing, it'll be one that you'll enjoy and one that you'll remember going to as well. So, Jeremy, congrats for putting that on. And too bad that we couldn't make it down there. Well, it was a big tournament scene, but it was worthwhile. What with Guilds of Ravnica being out and so much Legacy being played, that it makes it that awesome. That brings us right up to the end. Oh, no, wait a minute. Wizards made a big announcement on Thursday. So big, in fact, that Brian had no idea what we were talking about. Get the pre and post show for tonight, and you'll hear Brian going, wait a minute, we did what? We're not going to qualify for the Pro Tour? Okay, it'll all be laid bare right now.
In your defense on this one, Brian, I'm going to say this. That's ridiculous the way they announced a huge change like that.
Thank you. And I'm scared that Hurley has to come to my defense because I just never want that to be a, you know, Your Honor, Your Honor, please. And I'll be like, oh, what's he going to say now?
I had a discussion with a listener that was texting me actually earlier this week. And he said, you know, really with kids and life, I don't really play Magic that much anymore. And I mainly only do it because you guys entertain me and you keep me in the news. And my comment back was, I'm like, well, if Wizards keeps releasing the news the way they're doing, I don't know, A, how much more I would like to play the game, and B, how much longer the game will be around, because it's just been atrocious. I just got a couple thumbs up from that one.
First of all, that person said that they don't get to play very often because of their schedule and their kids. I think it's very rude of you to call Brian a listener, because he's right here.
That's true.
If you didn't already know this was coming, I'm one of those people who's wondering, how much does it impact you? If you're really grinding, trying to make the pro tour, you probably have your ear to the ground for things like this, but it also has far ranging impacts for those of us who are less pro tour focused in our Magic endeavors. Just to say, I think this is the only article I've printed off in its entirety since like episode 19 rings a bell for some reason. So grab an extra beverage. We're going to be here for a minute. In a post entitled 2019 Schedules, Pro Tour Qualifying, and Magic Fest. Matt, I know you're salivating right now. Just woe it down a minute and you'll have your moment in the sun in just a second. Wizards essentially said this: GP weekends are getting a new look and a new name. What you formerly knew as a GP is now Magic Fest. These weekends will play host to GPs, but will also include all the side events, artist panels. So everything that you associate with a GP now is a GP, but it's titled Magic Fest. And the Grand Prix is an event inside Magic Fest. Now, this was interesting. Pro Tours, for quite some time, went through this window where they were exclusive. In the old days, you could go and watch on the floor. Then they became private. Well, they're once again going to be put back into the public realm as part of Magic Fests on Pro Tour weekend. So if you're going to go to any of the Pro Tour events or any of the formerly GPs, Channel Fireball Events has their full Magic Fest schedule available at the website. And they're also, Wizards announced, changing how players qualify for the Pro Tour, as well as the pay scales for the GPs. All right, guys, let's start with the GPs. Magic Fest. Matt, there are now predetermined payout levels for these weekends. $80,000, $50,000, $35,000. It's all dependent upon presumed or projected attendance numbers. You came up with some interesting notes when it comes to intellectual property and what WotC has and doesn't have when it comes to renaming their GPs Magic Fests.
There's apparently a Magic Fest elsewhere in the world, somewhere in Europe. Come to find out, this is like David Blaine style magic, I guess is the best way to call it. Come to find out that WotC does not own the hashtag or the Twitter account for Magic Fest. They do not own a copyright, from what I've been able to find and what other people have been able to find, for said Magic Fest. And it's still up in the air whether the other people do as well. The website is also not owned by WotC or Hasbro. This other place had actually reached out to say, okay, we're really concerned you guys are using our name, and it's a fairly big festival, I guess. They reached out to several community members because they didn't know who Magic the Gathering was or who owned them or anything like that. And it just makes me wonder, did anyone Google this? Let's take the terrible naming convention aside, but did anyone Google this? Say, oh, hey, this is available. I mean, it's just confusing to me why they would name it that. Instead of GPs, they're MFers. I mean, come on.
That is a brilliant assumption. Oh, we're MFing this right now. Although, yeah, I will say this. If Wizards wants to reach out and bridge the gap to the European Magic community, sign me up for Magic Fest Hogwarts. I'll be there. Here's one thing that was concerning to me, Brian. I don't think that whoever was writing this article for Wizards understands the audience that they're writing for. And I'm pointing to these sentences from the Magic Fest release. Quote, The most visible change that Magic Fests will now have is that they'll be home to Pro Tours. So that means that Pro Tour Cleveland will be hosted at Magic Fest Cleveland, which means if you bomb out of the first day at a Pro Tour, there's a whole festival of magic for you to take part in. You can hang around with your friends and hit that commander game you were looking for later in the weekend. I don't think that most people who have participated in the Pro Tour were looking for a commander game later in the weekend if they didn't make day two. I understand that WotC is trying to be as big tent about this, to borrow a political term, if I may, but you still have to understand who's invested in which particular aspect of your game.
I couldn't agree with you more on this, and it doesn't work the opposite direction, by the way. If you just scrub out of your GP main event, hey, I'm going to go over to that side of the hall and see what's happening at this Pro Tour event. You can't do that. If you've got a fest, and a fest to me, to kind of take the parlance from the music world, is a big celebration of all things music. You've got merchandise, you've got food vendors, you've got dancing. You've got like this opened area for everybody to kind of come together as a community. All they've really shown me with this is we're renaming Grand Prix's Magic Fest, but there's really no substantial change other than there will be a corner in which you're not welcome, and that's called the Pro Tour. Everything else is exactly the same. They haven't really talked about any other huge things that they're going to do. They're going to have cosplay. Good. They're going to have artist booth. Yes. They're going to have side events. Well, that's what we expect. So what warrants a name change from a Grand Prix to a Magic Fest? I just don't understand the rebranding at this time. If all substantively going to do is include making it more convenient for those Pro Tour players to come to a place so they don't have to get another venue. Yeah, the writing on the article was not good, but it just reveals kind of a deeper lack of understanding of what this really is going to be. And in some cases, I don't want to share my space with the pros because, hey, I'm playing Magic for one reason. They're playing Magic for a completely different reason. If we can have them in different times and different buildings, so be it. I think it's better for everybody.
I actually just got a couple of texts from a couple of pros, Brian. They don't want you in their space either. So they're absolutely down with that. Brian, it's hashtag Magic Fest is how you follow along. Matt, I know you're entering that hashtag into your Twitter followers list right now. Magic Fest.
The other confusing thing about this, WotC has other games. Dungeons & Dragons. They have the new Transformers game that is going over fairly well. They have Kaijudo, I think it was, mm-hmm. and they have a couple other IPs in there, hidden in there as well. So my other question is, why make it named Magic Fest? Why not make it something more neutral where how many times have we been like, I'm over Magic when you're just on a losing streak? What if they had a corner that said, hey, want to learn to play Transformers? I'd be like, hey, I'll throw down $10 to do that. You know, something like that.
It's because they had to cancel year two of HasbroCon.
It makes no sense to me because you already have a venue, but that's a whole nother ball of wax with their marketing nonsense.
Hurley, doesn't that to you, that kind of change, that kind of substantive change seems like it would be worthy of a new name?
I agree. And I think that they could have chosen a more neutral name. I don't want them to choose WotC Fest because that was probably number two on their list.
But I know it was.
Their decisions just astound me sometimes.
Magic Fest appears to be the new frontier for how we're going to spend our magic weekends together. At least if you're trying to qualify for the Pro Tour, you've got something to look forward to. A straight line to your Pro Tour appearance at a Magic Fest. Okay, we did have to circle back there to Magic Fest in order to make this all good. The second part of this big release from WotC on 2019 scheduling, Pro Tour qualifying, and Magic Fest is the Pro Tour. The first two Pro Tours of 2019, Cleveland and London, are operating under the current qualification system. In the future, which starts with Pro Tour Dallas-Fort Worth, GPs, open events, and invite-only events are the new categories. If you win those, if you finish in a sufficiently high position based on the attendance for those events, They are all now direct qualifiers. PPTQs, RPTQs, those are all a thing of the past. Now you'll play one event and know if you're qualified for the Pro Tour. Guys, I personally like this direct line approach, even though it may take some of the LGSs out of the picture. I think it's simpler for players. It's simpler to understand, and it gives you a defined goal in which you could try to jump a metagame rather than looking at it over a long-term multiple-stop event. But Matt, what I'm not sure about is how this actually plays out in reality. Wizards has left themselves a lot of loose room to identify, quote, open events and invite-only events. Now, the easy understanding of these is an LGS saying, hey, we're going to have everybody in our area with X amount of Planeswalker points come in, and the winner gets a spot into the Pro Tour. Is it going to be that simple? Are we going to see people take advantage of these opportunities? Or will they bypass sort of local game stores and regional outlets in favor of the growing sort of national tournament scene?
I don't know, because there's just too much ambiguity in there. And I do think that taking away those tournaments, PPTQs were never huge unless you had a big community. I mean, we had a local PPTQ. I think it was, we'd have to go through the show notes, but I think it was like 39 people. That's a big one. But you also have some that are 12 people. But I do think it brought people into stores. And I think that's a huge mistake to do that way without replacing it immediately. And this is just typical, again, typical communication where there's a lot of ambiguity, including on what regions are qualified for each of the Grand Prix as well, mm-hmm. Sean, I don't know. Does that bother you as well? Or Brian, does that bother you?
Yeah, the regional Grand Prix qualifications is strange because I would need some clarification. So I'm not going to come out and make a full judgment on that yet, because I think Wizards has obviously been ambiguous in their announcement of that because they don't fully know. What I do agree with you, Hurley, and vehemently disagree with Sean for is the kind of direct line to qualifying for the Pro Tour. What I feel like WotC has done to their detriment over the course of the last couple decisions, and this starts with kind of the Hasbro toy shop, selling the Mythic Rares version of Guilds of Ravnica, and now kind of taking the LGS out of the whole PPTQ, RPTQ idea, is you're just kind of cutting out the middleman. But in this case, the middleman is the heart of where the game lives. And I think that that's just a mistake. What they're trying to do is just push everybody to these large events. Well, not everybody likes to go to 2,000 person events or 1,000 person events. People like to go to the 40 person, the 50 person, the 100 person events, and they kind of gradually work their way up. So if the only way you can do this is to go from Friday Night Magic to then SCG Opens to then kind of the Magic Fest model to qualify for a PTQ or a Pro Tour, that to me seems like a major jump. I don't think I'm on board with that. I'd like to see how this works its way out, but there's a lot of grinders, and just kind of like there's no binder grinding anymore in Magic when it comes to trading, because there's just so much information at your fingertips all the time. Is this going to kill people who grind on the weekends to get from PPTQ to PPTQ trying to get that RPTQ qualifier to try to get to the Pro Tour? There's plenty of people who have qualified that way. Was it just too onerous on the shops, or was it just too onerous on WotC? And that would be the big question I'd like to ask.
I don't think it was too onerous on WotC. I think for once, WotC has, without coming out and being explicit about it, realized that they have more players who want to play at a high competitive level who are in our category at this point. And what I mean by our category is people who are good players, but people who don't have the time to grind from RPTQ to RPPTQ to PPTQ to whatever you need. We have a chance to go to an event. We have a chance to play that event. We're willing to pay the increased price. There is a growing realization that the audience for this game is along with the game itself. Because remember, we had the 25-year celebration. A lot of the audience for this game is aging, and that's a compliment to the game. The game is aging so well that a lot of players are aging with it. And I think it's one thing that they've quietly done to sort of tip their cap to the quote unquote enfranchised player. So I really like this move from WotC. Matt, am I reading too much into this?
No, I think it's honestly just them not understanding the role that LGSs play in the community. I think they've either lost sight of it or Hasbro has muddied the water so much. They're just following orders at this point.
All right. Well, there's one more thing we have to speak about, and that's the Loxodon in the room. Wizards announced that there will be 6 Pro Tours next year. There are no more Pro Tour invites. So while there will be 6 Pro Tours as opposed to 4, there are still the same overall number of invites. So they're just taking those invites and spreading them out to 6 different events. If you're a pro that's already on the gravy train, this has got to be great because your EV just went up for those 2 more events in which you have no more players to play against, so to speak.
With the EV, I think that that's probably a positive for those people who are already in the Pro Tour, because it's, let's just face it, you two are never going to qualify for a Pro Tour, right?
So speak for yourself.
No.
Did you notice he said you two, Matt? You two?
I know.
Like he's going to.
Hey, I could go on a burning run here pretty soon. I think for those enfranchised players, you've got more of an opportunity to win or to top 8 a Pro Tour, to do really, really well at a Pro Tour, which is only going to increase your brand, maybe your endorsement deals, etc. You've got a lot more exposure at 6 Pro Tours than you did at 4. So, no, that's a great increase for them, and I think that's great. For the normal person, though, no, I don't think that should matter one iota, to be honest with you. It's just going to be, hey, we get more coverage of high-level Magic being played, so I guess overall it's a bonus. The fact that maybe I'm not going to be seeing that coverage because it's going to be happening at the same time I'm at my Magic Fest might be a detriment.
Matt, is Wizards missing the boat here, as Brian was saying? Or should they be targeting people like us? Is the next sponsor of Pro Tour Honolulu Tito's Vodka?
No, they should be trying to pull in more players, because you can only get so much blood out of a turnip before it just kind of dries up. You know, it goes back to the rebranding on this, where I like the more Pro Tours. I think it's really cool they're incorporating the Pro Tours into the MFers. I like the idea because that gets more eyes on professional Magic, because there's a lot of people out there who have no idea that it exists, including what you might consider enfranchised players. But at the same time, pull in people from other areas of WotC. Don't just kill yourself to get more money out of existing players. I think they need to do everything they can to get new eyeballs. I think Magic Arena was a big step, and it will be once it releases. The new app might be a big step.
Jerry Thompson's on line one. He's got a comment about incorporating quote-unquote pro Magic. The last sentence in this Magic release article that we've been talking about all the changes coming up, quote, competitive Magic gaming has a bright future, and 2019 is our launching pad. We'll see you there. Hopefully everything that you love about the game and the way you like to play it will be included wherever you want to play Magic. And the next time something happens that you're for, against, or maybe isn't what you wanted out of the game, let us know. TheTryHards3@gmail.com. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Matt, that is one big, angry-looking dragon you've got there. What is going on? Why are you on a triple casting cost 2-color legendary creature this week?
Good old Niv-Mizzet Perrin, Guilds of Ravnica. This card's under $1.75. It is a rare, but I've been playing Izzet-style decks in Standard, and this card is super powerful. Pick up your playset now, because I can see this having a breakout weekend in the next month to 2 months, and it's a $253 card. This should be an easy pickup, about $1-$1.25, but this card is super powerful. So Niv-Mizzet, Perrin out of Guilds of Ravnica, pick them up. I'd even pick up some foils if you could get them at about the $9 price.
Works well in your Thousand Year Storm deck as well.
Oh my gosh, I played against one of those. I've never been so happy to sit there and watch people play cast spells against me.
Niv-Mizzet Perrin here on Tryhards. We already started brewing. I didn't know Thousand Year Storm was going to be on the menu this week. So take us somewhere else. Maybe a chef's table close to the brew kitchen.
Well, instead of the Thousand Year Storm, how about we tame the storm a little bit? You like how I did that, Sean? That was pretty good lead-in. Card I'm liking this week for 3 minutes to brew is something out of Ixalan. really, to me, smacks of more of a modern card or a legacy card, and so I'm curious to get your take on it. This is Siren Storm Tamer. It's for one blue. It is a Siren Pirate Wizard, so triple creature type, flying for one blue. Sacrifice Siren Storm Tamer, counter target spell or ability that targets you or a creature you control. This card, it's an uncommon, but it seems pretty powerful to me for those kind of tempo decks that could possibly use something like this to, you know, get ahead in a game. So, Sean, where are you on Siren Storm Tamer? Do you think that this is maybe something that's going to be in the new metagame? Or if you had to brew with this, what would you do? Siren Storm Tamer, 3 minutes to brew.
This might as well be called Siren Settle the Wreckage Tamer, because that's really what it protects you from. You have Shalai Voice of Plenty to do that in standard. Siren Storm Tamer does pretty much the same thing. The two spells I think you really want to protect yourself from in standard are Settle the Wreckage and Vraska's Contempt, and it works well against both of them. The other interesting thing that I think this is rising in financial value because of is the fringe rise of the mono blue aggro deck, or mono blue tempo deck, whatever you want to call it. Siren Storm Tamer plays a major role in both of them. You can get it down on turn one. There's nothing you really want to protect yourself from on turn one, turn two, turn three in standard. Maybe in modern, where you can be thought seized, but protecting yourself from that later in the game may not be as important, which is kind of paradoxical, because the individual cards themselves in modern are so powerful that if they take just one, you have other powerful cards left in your hand. Whereas in standard, you may have one card that's head and shoulders power-wise above the rest of your hand, so you're more likely to protect it.
This card is kind of the bane of my existence in standard right now. That mono blue deck is super cheap, so lots of people are playing it. It's very powerful as well. The Siren Storm Tamer is a card that helps. This and the Djinn are cards that help make it. One of the biggest reasons this card is very powerful is I'm playing the Is It version of the deck right now. It relies upon the 3-mana instant that does 2 damage to all non-pirate creatures. And this is a pirate. And I can't tell you how much that drives me just absolutely insane. Powerful and standard, and I do think it's a little underpowered in modern, but I think in standard, it's got a lot more places than just that mono blue beatdown deck.
The card that came to mind when I first was looking at this more in depth was Selfless Spirit. That is obviously a very powerful card in a very powerful archetype of humans or in banned spirits. This is a different beast altogether, but with a very similar effect. What you are basically doing with this card is putting your opponent to a decision. I've got to cast a spell that is probably going to get countered, or I'm going to activate an ability that's going to get countered, but I've got to do it just to get this thing off of the table and then pick my fight elsewhere. And I think that's a great, great card to have if you're someone who is looking to put your opponent to those kinds of decisions, flood the board with cheap creatures, pump them with some things, try to get some card advantage. So I really like this deck in either that mono blue deck that Hurley was talking about in an Is It build, along with, you know, permission like Ionize. You've got a lot of different ways to get to your opponent. So Siren Storm Tamer, I'm looking forward, maybe not in a pirate tribal deck, but there's hope for this going forward in standard, I believe.
This week's 3 minutes to brew here on Tryhards. Guys, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? For me, it's a very busy week. I'll be honest. The thing that I did to get better at Magic was check back in with my local community. I had an event I had to be at on Friday night, didn't make it to my LGS in time for the Guilds of Ravnica draft, but I did have a chance to drop by. I saw a fantastic draft match between Jake and Swanson. Congratulations, guys. That was amazing to watch. I would have literally paid $5 to watch that match between you two. It was just incredible Magic between two great Magic players. Reconnecting with my guys at my LGS was how I got better at Magic this week. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
So I'm still working on this Bug Modern list, and I actually think I'm going to try my damnedest to stream it tomorrow night. It kind of depends on how I feel. Building this deck and going through a lot of, it's a lot of losing records, and a lot of, my deck just taking a dump on my chest pretty much because, somehow in like a 21 land deck, I can't draw, I keep a one lander and I can't draw an additional one. And then in a 19 land deck, I can draw 5 lands and 6 cards. tweaking this deck has been a lot of fun, and I really, really want to try my best to stream it. But I've been learning a lot about Modern Format as a whole, and I'm hoping that some of the shakeup does happen here relatively soon with Assassin's Trophy.
Brian, while Matt's recovering from his Cleveland steamer, hashtag Magic Fest, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
I have to say, Sean, the only interaction I had today while you and I were Skyping some Legacy was really good, just getting my hands on the Magic cards and actually playing some games with the Mono Blue Painter deck, I thought was really, really good. So I do have a tournament I got my eye on at the end of October, a Legacy tournament about an hour away. That is going to be kind of the next foray where I can pick up some cardboard and actually play some games. So it just felt good to actually have Magic cards in my hands that, you know, I wasn't just kind of goldfishing down in the basement as old men our age and our inclination do. After things kind of settled up this past week, I do look forward to getting down to the shop at least once or twice. And as you said, Sean, reconnecting with some of the players and some of the people I haven't seen for some time and just kind of find out, hey, what are they high on? What experiences have they had? I find that to be fascinating sometimes. How did their pre-release go? How did their drafting go this past weekend? What's been going on? You know, what are they building? What advice do they need? What cards are they looking for? That's the kind of stuff that I do miss after being kind of away from it for the last month, it seems like.
Oh, you brave soul. Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Try Hards. We'll be back next week. We'll see you then on Try Hards.